Before we begin, Simon and I want to acknowledge that we're recording this on the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, and we also want to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the land of the Yugambeh people. We acknowledge and pay our respects to Wurundjeri and Yugambeh elders past and present, and extend that respect to First Nations listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
My name's Ryan.
And I'm Simran.
And this is the podcast for burnt out girlies trying to stay
broadly relevant.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so not good.
Because of the asthma situation?
Oh, yeah, I had 2 asthma attacks in 12 hours. It wasn't great. I feel like I've, ran a marathon. I didn't even smoke. I, wasn't even cool about it. You know what I mean? I was just allergic to something in my own room, so. Feeling excited, feeling a little bit chaotic, but, you know, that's giving very much 20-something.
2016, I think.
Yeah. How are you feeling, broadly?
I'm a little tired, and, I have a lot of writing to do this week.
Sure.
But, excited, rejuvenated, alive.
Yeah, it's so nice to be alive, actually.
Broadly News.
So there was a lot of bad big news stories happening in the world over the past week, Simran.
Yeah, it was quite a stressful time.
Do you want to know a fun fact about the Bondi situation?
Okay.
So you know how, I'm going to assume you all know what the Bondi situation is.
Yeah.
But do you know how there was that guy who held off the guy with the knife with a bollard? Mm. Well, bollard guy got Australian citizenship out of it, so.
Great. Love that for him. I'm just looking at Ryan here and being like, that's what we chose to start off with. But on a more serious note, obviously our thoughts and prayers are with all the families that were affected by the Bondi stabbings. My prayers, Ryan's thoughts. Yeah. And that feels quite inconsequential, honestly, saying that, but yeah. I'm really not really sure what else to say about it. It's a very saddening moment in it all. Interesting that most of the victims were women. And I was reading this article by Crystal Andrews on Refinery 29, and it was basically saying that it was interesting that this situation wasn't classified as a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
And the stabbing that happened a few days later was classified a terrorist attack with the bishop. But I'd argue that misogyny is absolutely ideological. And it's just interesting how we talk about hate crimes and violence against women and kind of water down the language and the classifications that we use around it. A lot of it is kind of saying, you know, after they moved away from the wrongfully accused person in this case, they found the real attacker.
That was fucking wild, though.
Yeah, absolutely wild. Honestly, the mishandling of this case in the media is quite...
Well, did you hear 7 News came out and they're like, yeah, sorry, a junior social media editor put out the name. And I'm like, what is a junior... having been a junior social media editor... What are they doing determining the content of your releases?
Absolutely. And it's quite a irresponsible thing even to say that out loud, to release that statement after the fact. Because, A of all, it's not true, right? It's simply not true. There's no way that caliber of news could have gotten through a social media person, you know, that would have gone through multiple different people. We've both worked in social media and I've worked in media before, and no publication would ever do that. So that's actually crazy. There are so many other people that you have to go through. Irresponsible to put that social media producer in that position as well, because I have heard that they have gotten a lot of hate. But yeah, if you are supporting, you know, any of these victims and victims' families, the victims' families have asked not to post any photos that they have not released themselves. I've seen a lot of influencers and creators, you know, try and use their platform for good, which is a great thing. But I think we all need to take time to take it back to media literacy and really engage with the information coming out instead of kind of assuming what the families want from this situation, because it can be harmful. So I think just like taking a second, reading what they want and then acting accordingly is really important. Yeah, that was a hard one to talk about. We were really quite nervous to talk about this one, I'm not going to lie. So,
well, it's been a massive week for misogyny and...
That massive week for misogyny. No, totally. That's just a normal week, no?
Because it was the Bruce Lerman drama where we can legally say he was a rapist, is a rapist.
Yes.
It's not defamation.
Yeah.
Which absolutely...
Me? I'm still scared. Allegedly.
Well, it's been on all the papers. Like the first word, just Bruce Lerman and then rapist. And I'm like, you're fucking... Media team had a great day with that headline.
Absolutely. They just let wild. They let free.
One of the headlines was just like, loser and a rapist. And I was like...
Yep. I had a job once and going through like all of these like defamation cases, and my whole job through the article was just to put in the allegedlies that we've missed out on so that we wouldn't be sued. That was like, I love that. So that's like very exciting for every journalist out there. Yeah.
But the absolute hubris of him, you know, winning the case initially against Britney and then turning back and saying, you've defamed me, and his own fucking case to protect himself being the downfall. It's an indictment of the failures of the Australian justice system. But also, what a dumb man.
As Jojo Siwa says, karma's a bitch, isn't it?
Broadly culture.
Lots happening in culture, honestly.
Yeah.
Let's start with Coachella, shall we?
Can we talk about Grimes?
Yeah. Let's. My DJ queen.
That was so insane. So she did a DJ set and her fucking DJ machine, I don't know what you call it, wasn't working, or she didn't load her music right. And she just had a meltdown in front of the crowd, but also narrated what was going wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just like, ma'am, sometimes we need to hit mute on our mics.
No, totally. Know? I thought that was part of the performance, to be honest. I was like, this is the... I was like, wow, we're getting like so meta here. But no, it was brilliant. And all the DJs who like then stitched videos from that set being like, do you want a USB? Like,
absolute mess of it all.
Oh, and that's why you got a sound check, ladies and gentlemen.
I also saw some really horrible reviews of Lana Del Rey.
Oh, really?
Oh, did you hear good things about Lana Del Rey?
I actually have not heard anything about her set, which is kind of crazy.
I read a whole review, which was like, yeah, low energy, like, did not serve. Like, the best parts were when she brought the guests on. And I was like...
It's hard, though, because Lana's, like, discography is kind of just, like, low energy. It's not you're not, like, shaking ass, you know?
There was a specific quote, and I can't remember where this review, so sorry to the journalist who I'm plagiarizing.
Wow.
But the quote was something like, you know, rather than seeming unbothered, she just seemed like she didn't care. And I was like, oop.
Okay, hard line to thread, though.
But no? I think, you know, like, I'm sure she's the sort of artist who, like, would fucking slay in an intimate, like, 60-person cabaret hall.
No, totally.
You'd be broken inside, but I do think it takes a different caliber of artist to handle a massive arena.
I don't know if caliber is the correct word. I just think different vibe of artists. Yeah. Like, I love Lana, my problematic queen. But, like, I also don't know if I would love to see, like, Adele at, like, Coachella either, you know? Like, because that is, like...
When she's belting and all those
notes. Sad vibes, though. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we need collective sadness. No.
I think we've got enough of that, to be honest. But there was some other happy times. There was a lot of, I guess, like, intergenerational crossovers, which I love to see. No Doubt brought out Olivia Rodrigo to sing Bathwater, which was great. Love to see that. Renee Rapp was incredible. She got the cast of The L Word to present her, which was iconic. And then she brought out Kesha, which was like even better. And they sent TikTok and it was like amazing. And they were like, wake up in the morning.
Feeling like...
No, they said, fuck P. Diddy. And I was like, yes, get
it. I love Kesha so much.
Wow, incredible. Our IB queen.
You know, Kesha, like, I, in the early days of like pop 2010, I decided Kesha was like my ride or die. Mm-hmm. And I think I made the right choice, but yeah. It's been a rough couple of years because I said Taylor is not going to make it.
Did you actually say that? You said Kesha's your ride or die, Taylor Swift's not going to make it.
back in 2010. I was like, I think I'm making the right call here.
Totally. And we all say things, you know, sometimes.
Look, grade six, you know, think of the context, you know, Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
You know?
No, totally.
I thought Kesha was the future.
I mean, I thought Fergie was my ride or die, girly.
And in fact, it was a die.
Oh, no. Long live Fergie. Also at Coachella, it was really nice to see Palestinian artists really take the stage. Saint Laurent, the Palestinian French Algerian Serbian rapper, who is super hot. He's also like found viral fame, and he's 23. And he's literally 23 years old.
What?
And he made his Coachella debut, and honestly, incredible. Like so many people turned up, and it was so great to see.
23.
Yeah. Are you not allowed to call him hot anymore?
I don't know. I feel weird now.
No, but like we're only like 2 years older.
That's so weird though. In my head, I'm like, you've got to be at least 27 to be hot.
Ooh, wow. Is that the rule?
That's kind of, yeah.
Okay, totally.
Hey, so here's a problem. Have you run into this? The older you get, the older people have to be older than you.
Nobody's talking about
that. Have you been running into that?
Yeah. And people need to talk about that more often, honestly.
But Simon, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do brands owe you for consensual free labor?
Yeah. So I put that down on our notes here. And it's basically talking about the Bi Bambi and Yasmin situation. So for those who don't know, Yasmin, she's a TikToker, she's an influencer, and she used to work with the Melbourne-based fashion label Bi Bambi. And I'm talking like just incredible, like very editorial shoots that she's done for them. She's hosted like their events for them. Come to find out that she's actually been doing all this for free, which is
what?
Wild to me, right? Just because she like loved the brand so much, she loved the people that she was working with so much. And I guess like being an influencer isn't like her full-time job. She like works in, I don't know what she works in, but that's not her full-time job. Yeah, which is kind of crazy. So cut to now, right? Coachella. Bi Bambi organizes an influencer trip to Coachella. Guess who's not on the list? Yasmin.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, the bastards. My God.
And that's why you need to always get your gig and have a contract.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Contracts are very, very important. But it was quite disappointing. Honestly, Bi Bambi has been quite problematic for a little bit now. But even seeing the people that were invited to the trip, all, you know, skinny blonde girlies.
Of course.
Anyways, justice for Yasmin is all I'm saying. But it's interesting because some people are like, well, you know, it was their choice as a brand to take who they wanted to take. And it was bigger influencers. But there was a certain level of loyalty that Yasmin had.
Yeah.
And I actually found out Bi Bambi through her. So what do you think? Do you think that this like brand kind of like owed her or?
Morally, sure. But, you know, brands, corporations, morally flawed. And that's why you don't work with the devil unless you have a contract.
Yeah. And that's... Kris Jenner, come on, girl. Let's draw the contract right now. It's interesting. I feel like, especially with influencer and like content creators, the lines between work and life really blur. And I think this is like another case where it like really blurred, you know?
Well, especially in the creative industries, it's like you want to get ahead. And the easiest way to do that is by being exploited.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, maybe someday people will want to stop exploiting you and then you'll have nothing.
Yeah, totally.
Anywho, back to culture.
Totally.
Jojo Siwa?
Jojo Siwa, my girly. She is just, you know, still driving hard on the fact that she created K-pop. She did. Well, she did, so. But a woman called Britt Smith came out and said that actually Karma was her song. That she first released. It was actually, I think it was like an unreleased song, basically. But she produced it with Timbaland. Oh, like she'd produced one of her songs with Timbaland.
That's so wild.
And I love...
Jojo Siwa's hubris.
What does hubris mean? You used it twice and I still didn't know what it meant. Normalize asking what things mean, and then Ryan gets flustered and he's like, oh, I actually don't know what it means.
Hey Siri, what does hubris mean? Hubris is excessive pride or self-confidence.
And that is how I would describe JoJo Siwa. But she literally, so she got tracked down by TMZ, aka she called TMZ on herself because that's how that works.
Should we call TMZ on us?
We should.
Let's do it.
Like we can afford that. But basically, she was asked, like, you know, like, what do you think about Brit Smith coming out and saying that this was her song first? And JoJo was like, I don't even know who that is. She was like, I don't even know who that is. I'm like, girl, that is her song that you took from her. It wasn't like she didn't write it. Brit Smith didn't write it, but it was like her unreleased song, basically. But JoJo keeps saying that she's like writing all these songs. And so now Brit Smith has released this song 20 years later, and it is topping the charts. And it is going above JoJo Siwa, which I'm obsessed with that.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I find it so wild when artists are like, no, I wrote the song. And I'm like, we all heard Sia rise to fame in 2016. Like, we know that there's an underbelly of songwriters writing songs for you. Like,
it's okay. No shame. Literally.
Like, no tea. Like, I don't, you know, when you're an artist operating at that scale, you can't serve everything unless you're like, Noah can. Or someone else who, like, or Hozier. It's like,
Noah can.
You know, you're just a songwriter. But it's like, as a pop girly, you become this, like, amalgamation of, like, costume and design and storytelling and ideas and music. You can't do it all, you know? Like, the world you're creating, you can't do it all. Of course you're going to have songwriters. There's no shame. Don't lie about it.
No, it's getting weird, honestly. Yeah. Like, literally, there's everybody does it and everybody knows that everybody does it. So, like, why claim something as your own, I guess? And put some respect on Brit Smith's name, okay?
Do you want to talk about Heartbreak High?
I sure do. I finished the second season. I literally started, the day that it came out, I was coming from Springvale to, like, Brunswick area. And that's, like, a two-hour situation, right? Yeah. And so I'm, like, watching Heartbreak High, like, on my journey back. And I was so, engrossed in this show that I missed my own stop and made my journey 1 hour longer because I rode it all the way to the end of the line.
What line?
It was, like, my 58 tram.
Oh, my.
Yeah, just, like, to, like, West Coburg, so, like, wasn't so crazy. But
Jesus.
Yeah, but, no, absolutely wild. Don't dox me. Don't find out where I live through that. No, I was obsessed with Heartbreak High because I feel like they tackle really, like, heavy life situations in a way that doesn't need to be, like, super, like, tragically shown. So they had, like, an abortion storyline, and it was a very nice way to show the story, to be honest. It was a very supportive and loving environment that it happened, and it was a very, like, a normal thing. And I know the pro-lifers are like, abortion shouldn't be normal. Okay, shut up. It is. So there you go. Like, people get pregnant and then they don't want to be, and then they
command Z.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I thought that was a really beautiful thing, and I think that more shows, and I feel like Gen Z Australian media does a really good job at this, at showing really heavy milestones in a not so heavy light.
The first time I saw that was Josh Thomas's Please Like Me. Mm-hmm. Their abortion storyline, I think, was handled really well.
Yeah.
I think it's part of the Australian sensibility, the way we approach these serious topics with levity, because it's like, there's no point, like, talking about the importance over and over and over, because that just stresses people out. It's like, you know, things may suck, but we got to get through it, so why stress?
Absolutely. I actually do like that about us. Wait, do I like being Australian?
I have a lot of issues with Australia.
Okay, sure.
But, like, there is something about some Australian attitudes towards life that genuinely I'm like, no, life can be good here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we're still watching you, Australia. Australia, okay?
Broadly Deep.
What are we deep diving about today?
Criticism.
Okay. Why are you yelling at me?
And what I've been doing during the comedy festival is doing little Instagram reels where I just talk about shows that I really liked.
This is Melbourne Comedy Festival. International Comedy Festival.
I actually put out a 3-star review, which I have a lot of thoughts about and I regret doing, but we'll talk about that. Yeah.
Look, the Australian media landscape is overwhelmingly friendly, I would say.
Yes. So there's been a lot of criticism of our criticism industry over the years, where basically you'll never see a 1-star review in Australia because it doesn't happen, because for a couple of reasons. Access journalism is one thing, where journalisms will prioritize, you know, getting those free tickets and getting into shows, and so don't want to legitimately critique art because then they don't get access to those shows. And also there's, I think, a sense that because our arts industry is very underfunded and very precarious, there's a sense that you don't want to critique what work is done and just celebrate the fact that it is done.
Yeah.
And to an extent, I think I agree with the 3-star review that I put out. I don't begrudge that. But I don't think... I regret posting it.
Right.
I think I should have kept that on my blog, which no one reads. Yeah. I mean, as an artist myself, actually what I want to do is uplift the industry that I work in. And that's the thought I have.
It's a hard thing to do because I do think that criticism in media does serve a purpose, right?
Like profoundly. It's massively important.
Yeah. Like overarchingly, it's kind of like this like watchdog, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, you know, holds like creators and artists and media outlets accountable to some extent. And like also you are able to like provide, you know, value through feedback, and like maybe that makes that artist's work,
absolutely,
you know, more accessible in a way, or, you know, better. That's like assuming
it's radically important.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's this two-sided edge where, like, our arts industry is so precarious, but so is our media industry, you know? And so we don't have, like, that many journalists who are paid to critique art.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it expands beyond art, to be honest.
Yeah,
in terms of, like, I've definitely interviewed people, and I didn't love the interview experience of that. I actually didn't really like the people that I was interviewing, but I was platforming something that they were doing, right?
Yeah.
And that superseded my experience with them and maybe, like, their entirety of their, like, ethos, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a hard thing because you're kind of scared to fuck up any chance that we have. I definitely feel that when it comes to women of color specifically. Like, I really try and stay away from critiquing women of color because we have so little.
No.
Honestly.
I saw a show during Comedy Festival, which I'm going to be very vague about, even though my review is online. but it's from a marginalized person. And there were some really, really interesting ideas, like really interesting ideas. It wasn't presented with enough structure that those ideas could be communicated properly to the audience. And there was like a sloppiness to the work, which if it was like a straight white man doing that performance, immediately I'm like 1-star, 2 stars. This is a hot take, but I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah.
Because I think... it's that thing of, like, considering positionality. It's like, have these artists had as many opportunities as a straight white man, you know? Like, we know straight white men can serve excellence because they get admitted to the schools, you know? So,
but
to
they're
what extent,
rewarded for mediocrity. So, like, why aren't we, like, rewarding, like, the marginalized groups either for mediocrity?
Well,
know?
Yeah, and which is why... I feel like I was more lenient with my review and tried to be more empathetic. But then at the same time, it's like, is that leniency ultimately going to hinder the artist as well by not giving them the proper feedback they need to, like, grow and develop their practice?
Yeah.
And actually achieve excellence, which I know they're capable of, you know? It's a complicated and messy thing. Please don't look up the review that I
wrote. Absolutely. But, like, as a critiquer and, like, as a writer for myself, I always, like, when I'm, like, going to critique someone, or, like, when I'm, like, I feel like I'm exposing someone for, like, something like that, I always think, I'm, like, oh, I am so full of myself, basically.
Yeah.
That I think that that this one, like, you know, thing that I'm writing, this one piece of content that I'm putting out there is going to be the thing that really changes you know, like an artist's like way forward, absolutely. You know? And like realistically, I'm not really sure how that works. Is it like, yeah, is it causing more harm than good? I don't know. But at the same time, are we like, if everybody thinks that, then where do we progress from, you know?
Well, it's also the thing of like artists live in echo chambers, right? Mm-hmm. Because nobody's going to, if you hate a show, you might heckle them. Don't, but you might. But broadly, like artists aren't going to receive that much pushback. You know, they're going to hear from people who loved it and their friends who are also going to be nice. It's like, actually, that negative criticism is really valuable. And but then, on the other hand, as critics, we owe it to artists to come from a place of kindness and empathy and not just go on the attack.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you don't want to go on like the other side of the spectrum where it's like Daily Mail-esque attack. What I mean? Like, they classify it as like, we're just like criticizing and we're giving like critical feedback,
so
right?
There was a show that I saw, which I was excited for. And then the first joke of the night was this comedian got up and immediately asked someone in the front row who was wearing a mask, do you have AIDS?
Totally.
I was just like, fuck.
That's a choice.
And that was my review, was this is how it opened. I was offside, incredibly abrasive, you know, and hard to come back from that. So I give them 3 stars.
That's an insane thing to say to start off with.
Completely insane. But it, and then it's like, you know, I was like, oh, I wonder if the artist reads this. What will they think? Mm. Will they think I'm like just a sensitive queer who just can't handle an AIDS joke? But it's like, I don't know where I stand on it. And I don't know if I did the right thing, but I gave them 3 stars.
Someone had to, I guess. But it kind of like gets me thinking of, I guess, Joe Coy. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a comedian and he hosted shows. I think it was the Emmys.
Yeah. Oh, is he the fuckwit who fucked
Golden Globes.
Up? Yeah. Fucking fuckwit. Fuck.
Yes. All of the above. Right. But you know, he is half Filipino, right? So what do we do with that? and I think that he deserved the criticism that he received. But at the same time, there were like other comics who were like, you know, it's very easy to kind of like lash out when you know that you're bombing a set, you know, and you're like, okay, well, you know what? This wasn't my fault sort of thing. Is that like inherently a bad thing to do as a person? For sure. I can also understand how in that situation, you're in front of hundreds of your peers and then it's like going out, you know, internationally broadcasted. And then, you know, you're bombing it hard. The criticism, valid, for sure. You know, like, don't come for Taylor Swift. It's like enough already. We're all human.
Yeah.
You know? And I think maybe that was a case where the empathy was lacking in the criticism.
Yeah.
But it's like in...
But that was an incredibly misogynistic...
No, absolutely.
And like... Very explicitly misogynistic.
Yeah.
Because I think there's something different between, like, there's some good ideas here and you tried your best, but you failed, versus you actively made the world worse, perhaps never go on stage again.
Totally.
You know, and I think there's two different things.
It's
like that artist who I really loved the ideas, but it wasn't expressed well. It's like, please try again.
Yeah.
Please try again because I want to see what you can do. Whereas, do you have AIDS? It's like,
never say that again.
Never get up on stage again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. I am a big believer that like rehabilitation in any realm takes support. Right?
Yes,
like from like the people around you, from your community and like your community at large as well. And so that's kind of like where I struggle with this, you know, I think, but I think it's also like, the societal, me growing up as a woman in society, you know, that I give everybody like 5, 6, 7, 8 chances, you know, but I do think that to be better, you need some sort of support. I guess the point, like with artists though specifically, is that not everybody needs to be an artist. You can also just get like a normal job, you know? Like, sorry, but you can, okay? And I'm sick of it. Jason Nash, he is a YouTuber and like, you know, part of like the vlog squad with like David Dobrik. Like, he goes on TikTok lives now and basically like asks for like rewards from, you know, like 12-year-olds basically, and makes his like money from like those like gifts that you get. And the critique is that like he's like not that funny, but he's like, I can't do anything else. I'm like, you could just get a normal job, you know?
Look, some of us have ADHD.
There are work from home jobs, okay?
Do you think people, depending upon their positionality, deserve more or less chances?
That's a great question. Yes. Depending on their positionality, do they deserve more or less chances? I guess it depends, right? That's a really hard question to answer. Yeah. It really is. I guess boundaries, important, right? Doesn't always have to be you giving the person chances.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, when we talk about, it's hard, though, because we're, like, talking about society as, like, one entity, you know? But
yes.
That's not actually how it works.
Society's
yeah.
not real.
Yes, exactly.
It's just a bunch of people with thoughts.
Nothing is real, and no thoughts matter. So click off now. Yeah, but... I don't know. It's a hard thing to grapple with, I guess, as reviewers and writers. It's not the hardest thing to grapple with. In fact, it means nothing, actually. But yeah. And it really centers us around the art, but that's okay.
There's this theater critic and maker from New York who I follow on TikTok. And she posted this really fascinating TikTok talking about theater reviews and how, like, a lot of the time, like, criticism is seen, you know, like theater, where it's like you read one bad review and then, you know, you think all reviews are shit, which happens with theater as well, because there's so much shit theater in the world. And there's so many shit reviews. Like, I have read reviews from Comedy Fest for shows where, you know, people somehow manage to turn out 700 words on, like, the most obnoxious bullshit thing. And it's basically just congratulating artists for getting up there, which, yes... Cheers to all the artists who get up there. You did great. But what she's talking about is kind of imagining, like, theater reviews and theater criticism and criticism, how it could be something different than just, like, an overview of the show and kind of, like, reviewing all the different aspects. And she talked about some different models of reviewing examples that she has in New York. And there's this one called... three views, which is really interesting. So every show that they review, they send three different reviewers from different positionalities, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, different queers, yeah. different race, different, et cetera, different gender.
Yeah.
And so every show you get those different positionalities in the review and the analysis.
Lovely.
Because, you know, like, obviously journalists can't be impartial, but it's like there is something... interesting, I think, to be found by seeing what different positionalities have to say about a different show and what are the similarities and what are the differences, which is a really different, really interesting model of criticism. Yeah. And, you know, I think what I've been thinking about with these, like, video reels that I've been doing is I'm like, actually what I want to do is, like, video essays about the shows that I like, because I'm less interested in being like, the costume was really effectively, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. I'm more interested in, like, unpicking the ideas and seeing, like, how that links to, like, broader ways of understanding the world. Like, that's interesting. Talking about it, you know, and with it. Yeah. I don't know what my point is, but there's so much shit reviews in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, baseline, when you're, like, critiquing anything, like, not even, like, you know, on a professional level, like, you know, like, if you're critiquing anything, I think people need to start listening and watching things just for the sake of listening rather than listening and watching for the sake of responding. Like, you're waiting to respond, basically. And I think a lot of people who go and, like, review things and, you know, critique things, and especially, like, a lot of different, like, journalists I even know, are always, like, ready to respond and kind of have, like, they've prepped their take already, sort of thing, you know?
Well, it's interesting because, like, I'm seeing, you know, upwards of 40 or 60 shows this Comedy Fest, and it's like, ostensibly, I have to write about each one and have my own take. But it's like, it's not about me having a take, it's about me trying to communicate the artist's ideas and the efficacy of their delivery, you know, which is something different.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great way to put it. So I guess it's up to you whether or not you want to be a dickhead.
Or not.
Or not. But maybe we need more dickheads. Should we check out?
Yeah.
Okay. The question is, when was the last time that you shit yourself?
That's a great question.
The last time I shit myself, I was pretty lucky. I was in my room, actually. you know, every good shitting yourself story starts with a shot, I think.
What was the cleanup line?
Not great. The underwear is gone.
Oh.
We're done with it.
I didn't really shit myself, but there was, in fact,
no.
No. And I was in a single stall. Like, there was nowhere I could walk for toilet paper without walking into a public area.
Yeah.
I had no choice but to pull up my pants and walk to Uniqlo.
Well, you went to Uniqlo. God, shopping spree while you're at it. My God. That's so sad.
I love my the Uniqlo one.
Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully this episode wasn't too shitty, but if you're loving Broadly Relevant, please tell a friend or leave a review.